You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Gravity had a good run, but it's time to feel the weightlessness of the Brooks Glycerin 21. These running shoes feature nitrogen-infused DNA Loft V3 cushioning. Brooks has even magnified the plushness to elevate the softness to new levels. And if you want extra support, find these same features in the Brooks Glycerin GTS 21. Learn more and shop now at brooksrunning.com. That's brooksrunning.com.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Mama's Talkin' Loud. Jess and I love bringing these stories to you, amplifying the journey of the working artist mom, supporting the struggle, and striving to change the social safety net. But we need your help. If you haven't already, we would so appreciate if you would follow, rate, and review us wherever you listen to your podcast. This is the way we can continue to raise awareness and change the narrative. And if you want more insight into our world, please follow us on Instagram at Mamas Talkin' Loud, on Twitter at Mamas Talkin' Pod, and on our website, www.mamastalkinloud.com.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Mamas Talkin' Loud. I'm Jessica Rush.
And I'm Kara Cooper. Best known for originating the titular character in the original Broadway production of Mary Poppins, our guest first made her Broadway debut as Belle after starring in the national tour of On the Record right out of college. She is a Disney darling for sure.
Yeah. She also, though, is no stranger to the classics, touring the country as Mother Abbess in The Sound of Music until she was 8 months pregnant. Oh my God. Thank goodness for that nun's habit, right? She joins us today to share that hilarious story, as well as her struggles with postpartum depression and secondary infertility. Please enjoy our conversation with our friend Ashley Brown. We are so happy to see you. I'm so happy to see your face, my friend.
No, y'all too. It's been too long. I mean, this year feels like 5 years.
Oh my God.
A century, you mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes, literally a century.
Literally, that's what my forehead says. And that's
what... Honey, if you would see these roots.
The grays, all of it.
I know.
It's oh something. My God. Well, we always start off by having our guests tell us about their child or their children. So will you tell us, this is like, I feel like I'm opening a can of worms with this one, but will you tell us about Emmeline?
So Emmeline Rose Whistler is something to behold, honey. She is 4 years old. She's going to be 5 May 9th, which is absolutely insane. Some ways feels like the longest 5 years of my life. And then at the same time, I'm like, I cannot believe my baby's 5. Like, what has happened? It's lots of mixed emotions, of course. And, you know, she is such a blend of my husband and I. It's daily. I think it's starting to lean more towards me, you know, just like not outgoing, introvert. Just kidding. But, you know, she's awesome, and she's going to run something someday. It's just right now, I'm just doing all I can for it not to be running us, but I don't want to squash it.
I was going to say, she's been running you guys.
Yes.
She was born.
I mean, y'all, she came out talking and, like, having opinions, and I'm like, you're not allowed to do that yet. Like, you're just not, but she is. She feels she is. But she is loving and sweet and hilarious. You know, it's like this age right now, y'all know. I mean, the one-liners are, I live for them. Yeah. Because they're so literal in the way they see and hear things. And you know, explain things. And I'm like, that's the most perfect description of that feeling or that moment. And you're just like, that's hilarious. Because as adults, you're like, well, we wouldn't really be able to say that. Right. Because we know better. But she is, you know, our kids are so resilient. And through this whole year, we moved down to be near my family for the year. We still have our house up in Jersey. But, you know, we asked her to go to a new school and new do new things. And she was like, okay. And meanwhile, I'm like, is she ever going to be able to handle it? And she did. She does. And mm-hmm. she is, you know, a leader. And I love seeing that. She's funny. I mean, but we have, with those strong personalities come some hard times and some meltdowns and some, you know, and it's just, you know. So again, ups and downs, I'm just saying, it's keeping it real. As I love that she's so, knows what she wants, strong-willed. Like there's so many things that are so great about that. But there's also like, because she won't eat new foods, she will starve herself. I think we went on 48 hours because she wouldn't eat foods in front of her. won't budge. Potty training, she stopped eating and drinking because she realized that made her go to the bathroom. So she's like, I'm not doing this. And then when I made it her decision and said, you're the only person in the whole world that can tell mommy and daddy when you have to go. Like, you're the only one that knows. That clicked. And she was like, oh, I have to go to the potty. And we never looked back. Like, we didn't even have to use night diapers. She was done. And that's Emmeline in a nutshell. It's on her terms.
Well, if that doesn't sum somebody up, I don't know what does. But it's so, like, you're talking about this little girl who's so strong-willed. And I feel like it must be so hard because you don't want to break that, right? Because, like, the hardest thing about being a woman is, like, sticking to your guns and holding on to what you believe is right. And so you want to support that the best that you can so that she can grow up and have these convictions. But also, like, she needs to be able to go to the bathroom and she needs to eat food and not go on a hunger strike. Yeah. So it must be a very hard line for you to walk.
It is, because at the same time, sometimes she's so convincing that I'm like, hold on a second. I do know more than you. Like, like, hold on. Like, and I'm a very strong woman too. So, I mean, we have a little bit of that going on. Because I'm like, hold on. No, I know better than you. I always will get into it. You know what I mean?
Right.
But sometimes I have to remind myself because she wants to pick out her outfits. She tells me how her hair, like, I'm telling y'all, it's very rarely does she go, okay, mommy. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know?
No. So. No. She doesn't. And I do have to remember, I have to jump in because I was thinking about us being on Marco Polo one day, this before the pandemic, when you were trying to potty train her. I will never, it's so funny. I love it. You were like sitting there chatting with me and y'all were in the living room or something. You're like, Emmeline, don't you go on this floor. Don't you go on this carpet. Emmeline. And then you're like, I gotta go. And you just like drop the phone. Because she fully started to go. She was just standing there like staring at you thinking, I'm just going to do this here, Mom, because that's what I want to do.
Because that's what I want to do. And I know you want me to go there. And then there's also the game we play. I'm like, don't you put that in your mouth. Don't you sit on that. And then she's like, and see, I'm like, that's actually probably not healthy, but sometimes it hurts.
Oh, no, it's true. These Southern girls, honey, because, you know.
But then the turnaround, though, she's meeting friends, she's at school and little VPK, little, you know, she starts kindergarten next year, beyond. And, she, you know, she has these little friends. And I said, well, I haven't heard about Luca in a while. Like, you used to talk about him all the time. And she goes, well, Mommy, I said to him, Luca, if you're not going to be friends with me every day, no matter what, then we have some things to discuss. I died laughing. And I was kind of, I was like, well, Emmeline, that's very direct. But I was like, get it, girl. I kind of feel the same way. You got to be consistent with your friendship. You can't be all willy-nilly. So I'm like, there's that. But just four.
I mean,
I'm
she
like,
is your daughter. No, I just, my God. The stories, it just make me so happy. She kills me.
Yes.
And you kill me. I mean, you, like, Ashley, I just, you know, one of the things I love about you, like, you know, you're an open book. You say it like it is. And there are, you know, you tend to talk a lot. I talk a lot. That's why I think, you know, when Ashley and I get together, y'all, I have to tell another little side note. We Broadway Baby Mamas, we would try to have these moms night out because we wanted to have community here in the city. This was before we started the podcast even. And we would have mom's night out and people would say, oh, I'm coming. And then slowly but surely, as the day wore on, more people backed out. And one time I showed up for mom's night out and I'm standing in front of this restaurant all by myself. And I knew, and at this point, Ashley was the only one who had not canceled. And I texted her and I was like, girl, it's just me. Like, I know you have to come from Hoboken or Jersey, whatever. And I was like, it's okay. Like, no one else is here. She's like, honey, I've already left the house. I'm headed to the ferry and I'm coming. And we had the fiercest little date.
It was so fun. It was just the two of us. And I think Emmeline was like 8 months old at this point. So I was like, honey, mama's heading out and I don't have a curfew.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, shoot. And we had so much fun. Remember we met Eric after the show and he was like, y'all. Had fun. I'm like, obviously. Yeah.
Obviously. Always. So let's talk about before Miss Emmeline came in to be, you know,
yeah.
she was there, but I want you to tell our people. So we've talked to women who are pregnant while they were working. Kara and I both worked while we were pregnant, but we had to leave relatively early on due to, you know, the costumes not showing what, you know, the costumes not, being what we could wear, you know, half tops don't really work with a pregnant belly.
You can try.
But tell us about, you were doing the Sound of Music when you were pregnant with Emmeline.
Yes.
And am I correct in thinking that you stayed in that show until you were like 8 months pregnant?
8 months. Like I was waddling. And I told Jack O'Brien, who was our director, who was awesome. I was like, so I think I'm going to leave at 6 months. He's like, darling, why? And I was like, well, I just feel like, out of respect for the show. He was like, no, you have to stay until, like, you can stay until you give birth. I was like, well, shoot. I mean, who usually says that? And I was like, okay. I mean, I'll stay until, like, it's laughable. And I did stay till it was laughable.
Well, because you were playing the Mother Abbess.
I mean, so the irony is just too good.
The I was a pregnant nun. And the funniest part about all that, with life being life and that everybody's journey is meant for them, is, I mean, it is a perfect example. So Daniel and I were trying to get pregnant for a couple of years. It wasn't happening. We did all this testing. And they're like, nothing is wrong with either of you, which is super exciting slash, well, then what the heck? Mm-hmm. So I was like, I got called in to go for this tour. And obviously I was thinking like I might be a Maria.
Yeah.
And then my agent called. I mean, hello. I was at the time, I was like only 33. I'm like, I'm so sure. I'm like, you know,
sheesh. I wish there was video for this episode. Cause like the telling your face, like the listeners are missing out a little bit, but go on.
We're going to have you back to just like Kiki on a video and then we'll have a special episode.
We should. So I go in and sing, you know, for Maria, and Jack was super sweet and he was like, you just have to be part of this show. And I was like, I never thought I would tour again, but I had never auditioned for Jack before. So I was like, let me just go in and, you know, never say never in this business, as we all know. And so my agent called me like 2 days later and he's like, are you sitting down? And I said, I was thinking like, oh, I got the part, whatever. And he was like, so Jack had this dream last night and he wants you to be the Mother Abbess. And I was like, excuse me? That's like me playing the role of like churning the butter at the opening of Oklahoma. Like, I'm just not there yet. And I was like, hold on. Like, are you like, climb every mountain, girl? Like, are you kidding me? Shoot. And I was like, I'm a little insulted and slash. He was like, well, he has this whole new take on the show. Anyways, long story long, he was like, my agents were like, just go meet with him and tell him your concerns. Because I was like, you know, I've played Mary Poppins and I was like 25 at the time when I was playing the part, but it's always aged me more than I am. And I've been told I have a maternal, you know, thing about me. Get it. But I was thinking, I'm like, the last thing I need to do is go play the old lady in the shoe in Sound of Music. So I was like, I just feel like I don't know and blah, blah, blah. Well, it turns out, you know, Jack, as y'all know him too, he could like sell ketchup to a woman in white gloves. I was sold. And I wanted to work with him and it was a great experience. Cut to, I'm in rehearsals and Daniel and I had done nothing different with our, you know, fertility journey other than just like be married and like, you know, do it sometimes. And all of a sudden, I'm in LA in tech. So I made it all through rehearsals in New York. And I'm in LA in tech. And I was like, gosh, I'm so tired. Or I just like, I'm not feeling good. But never once in my wildest dreams did I think I was pregnant. I was like, I'm sure I have a blood disorder. I'm like, I'm only going on and singing one song and then doing a strong reprise. And, you know, I'm so, it's like tech is not that exhausting for me. And there's no reason I should be this tired. Anyways, I get a positive pregnancy test and I cannot believe it. And so, and my due date was the same day, y'all, because I was only doing the first 6 months as, So my original due date, because I didn't know how pregnant I was like the same date as the end of my contract for Sound of Music. And so I was like, well, that would mean I'm like really, really far along. Like, you know, but anyways. So I was like, oh my gosh, this looks like I got the contract, walked down the street, got IVF, and then signed it. Like, it just all was lining up like I did it on purpose. And I was like, I really didn't. And so once we got to the point where we were telling people and I was going to leave, and anyways, they were super supportive. But since I was playing Mother Abbess, because I was really not wanting to play the role, and I was like, there's a reason this role is in my life. Let me just go with it. This is super weird. I had every out in the book. I'm like, why not? And here it was, this was supposed to be my journey where I could be in a role with no waistline. Hey, hey, hey. And I was in a sensible flat. Hey, 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 hey. And, you know, all that they needed was in this, you know, face and a voice. And that's what they got. And I was able to waddle my way through. But y'all, I literally, you know, towards the end, I was truly... And then at the stage door, people were like, oh my gosh, you're a pregnant Mother Abbess? And I said, yes, that means hysterical. I loved it.
I want to know how big that nun's habit, like how, what the circular circumference was of that robe, girl.
Oh, because I mean,
to cover a nun, I mean, any 8 month pregnant woman for the most part, and also to have it not be apparent since you are a nun.
Yes. I mean, and of course, you know, I have to hold your hands like this the whole time. So, I mean, obviously my hands got higher and higher. Eventually I was like, but the time I almost lost it is, at, you know, in the show, in the Sound of Music, where the Mother Abbess like opens the gate for the family to walk up the end of the show. Well, I actually had a key that actually had to open the gate, you know, because Jack doesn't like anything to be pretend. And y'all, the end of my run, the keys, because it had to hang on my belt. So obviously my belt kept getting higher and higher. And literally one of the shows, I couldn't find the key because it was under my pregnant boob and in between the belly. I couldn't find it. And I was like, like trying to find the key. And all the nuns were like, meanwhile, everybody's supposed to be like, and I was like, I've got to call it. Y'all, I can't find my, like, it was like a muni-sized key. It was massive. And I was like, and I couldn't, and everybody, and I was like, climb, like I couldn't get it together. And that's when I called Jack and I said, Jack, I think we've hit the point. I said, I'll give you one more city. I'll give it Atlanta. I wanted to make it to Atlanta because it's closest to my hometown. And so everybody could see in the waddle. And that was it. But y'all, I was able to do it for so long. And even when the week came, I'm like, I probably could do another 3 weeks. Like I could. Because the best part is like my voice got so, I'm sure y'all noticed like in your voices too, when you're pregnant, it changes. And my voice was just so much richer. Like I normally wouldn't have been able to sound that meaty on that song. Anyways, it's just, I know that was a longer story than necessary, but it was just more one of those things that came my way and it was so confusing. And I took it not knowing why. And then like my why was being pregnant and being able to stay in the show and play a role for so long that like you guys said, like normally we have to have a waistline. And I just... didn't.
I just love that Jack, like great. You said, I think I'm going to work to this point. And he's like, no, you're not. You're going to stay even longer. I mean,
yeah.
That never happens. B, coming from a man who has no experience being pregnant. Like, I just think that's incredible that was the way your news was received.
Absolutely. Because I was so nervous that I was going to be in trouble, which should not be how any of us ever feel, but it's truthful. And I felt like I was going to be judged by like, because the alignment of it was so freaky. It like, there's, even to me, I'm like, there's no way this could have been natural. Like, how did this happen? And so I feel like when I told him, I was so nervous that he was going to be mad at me because, you know, he wanted me to kind of head the show and put my name on it. And I said I would. And like, I just felt like I had a lot of responsibility within that cast. And again, I, you know, it's just how we all feel. It's just kind of, we're so excited, but we feel guilty. And it's, right? I want that to change for all of us.
Well, yeah, it's, I was going to say, we just talked to Rachel Spencer Hewitt last month, and she is, you know, the founder of PAL, Parent Artist Advocacy League. And she told us her story. And at the end of it, she said, you should walk in the room when you tell this news to whomever you're telling, your agents, your managers, the people you're working with, you should expect celebration. And then when there, if there isn't any, that should be the anomaly, as opposed to us saying, oh my God, that's amazing that he responded in that way. Yeah. Like, we should expect to have response in that way. Absolutely. And then when they don't respond that way with support and celebration, then we have a problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how, that's what needs to change.
And I feel too, it's just such a stigma with women in our business, because I mean, I remember in my early 20s, I remember a producer, I was doing a workshop of a new show, and I was like, I was curious why you didn't use the person who had been doing it. And they're like, oh, well, she had a baby, and that just changes everything for a while. And I was in my early 20s and didn't understand it. And I was like, oh, I was like, well, what do you mean? He was like, it's just something you can't explain. When a woman has a child, she's just no longer able to be childlike. She's not no longer able to be the ingenue. And I remember that really stuck with me. And I was like, well, aren't we acting? Like, aren't we actors? I'm just kind of like, I'm like, so you hired me because she had a kid? Like, I just remember being like, there's something I can't quite grasp. Because like I said, I was so not in that time in my life and in my early 20s. But I remember being like, that is not okay.
Yeah.
It's no, not okay. And guess, not. And that same person, when that show came back around after I had Emmeline, said the same thing to my agent. So he still hasn't learned.
Wow.
Ooh. Just say it's a thing.
I can't wait for you to sidebar and tell me who it was.
Oh, I will. I know.
So
I'm
many
like,
names in my I'm mind,
not,
right?
I know. I was like, I'm not going to talk ugly. I'm not going to talk ugly. But I will behind the scenes.
But that narrative is formative no matter what. Because like we're all ingesting that as we're coming up through the business. And that's what feeds that fear to say, I'm pregnant. Like, we've heard those stories over and over again. You've seen it in the works. So why would we not be fearful to celebrate our news?
And this is why we have this podcast and these conversations, amplifying the voice of the working artist, mother, or parent even. Mm-hmm. Although, let's be honest, it doesn't really tend to affect the men. That is what is so important. And that's why Kara and I continue to have these conversations. It's just, we are at a point, like Ann Quartz said, honey, who I know you know well, children, the time for children to be contraband is over.
It has to be. And I feel like, I mean, honestly, like, I have so much guilt and resentment, like, towards those feelings that our business has made us feel. And again, I mean, I'm not blaming the business for what I experienced after birth. When I've never struggled with depression my whole life. I've always been a genuinely upbeat person. Some people in my family have struggled with it. And so I've always kind of felt like, well, am I? And I'm like, well, no, I'm actually like, I'm good. But I do feel the pressures of, once I gave birth to Emmeline, to pretend that my life hadn't changed. And I was auditioning to take over for What's Her Butt and Cats 2 weeks, and in front of Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tara Rubin, 2 weeks after I've given birth, I'm like, I still have a pad to, like, because I'm still healing, and I'm there singing
Memory. Like, melting your face off.
And 2 weeks after birth, because I was so afraid, I didn't want anyone to think I was falling behind, because I created a human life. And I feel like, I mean, it's so, when I look back, because, you know, after you have your first kid, this is all new to you too. We're not born to know how to do it. Women are not like, we're just like men in that way. It's like, we've not done this before either. Like, we're trying to make it work. And I feel like, because I pushed myself so hard after birth, and that was just like, I think it was like not even 2 weeks. And then I auditioned for other things, because I was like, and people that, you know, I'm friends with on Facebook that would be in the rooms, they're like, didn't you just have a kid like 11 days ago? And I was like, yeah, can't keep me down. And I'm like, that's how, like, what a disservice that was to myself. And I feel like that push, like, really led to, I mean, I know postpartum depression has a lot to do with hormonal and a bunch of things, but I definitely think that played a part in me feeling depressed. And yeah. just because I didn't allow myself just to be a mom and to have that moment and to take a second and not feel like I was going to be left behind.
Yeah.
And that's just a feeling that I honestly, everybody who's giving birth right during this pandemic, I'm jealous. I'm like, y'all don't have the pandemic is horrible, but I'm saying like, I'm almost jealous of all these the moms in our business having babies right now, because there is no struggle to go back.
Right.
No one's asking that of them. No one's saying, well, you should be doing this and you should be doing this and you should have already lost the weight and you should have already, the show's been cast now. Sorry, you were, didn't care. You know, it's like, that's not happening to them right now. I'm envious a little bit that they're able to, you know, but that's also has a lot to do with my choices too. Like I let that affect me big time.
It's so interesting that you say all this about, you know, postpartum depression, because it's a conversation, right? We hear about it all the time, but still the images that we are fed and the way that we are taught that women need to come back from giving birth don't line up with supporting postpartum depression. Mm-hmm. You see the perfect image of the beautifully put together mother who's had a shower, who shed the baby weight, who's going back to work, who's doing all the things. Those are the images that we're fed. And we're also fed the narrative from work that we can't talk about our kids. So here we are grappling with this new identity. You've created a human. You're a mom now, which wasn't what you were prior to that. You're dealing with hormones. You may be depressed. And society is telling you, nope, you're not allowed to feel all those things. You just got to jump right back in. So even though the conversation about postpartum depression is happening, we're not doing anything as a society to be like, it's okay. It's okay to be a mom right now. And guess what? There will be a place for you at work when you are ready to come back. That's the big problem. Mm-hmm. We're so afraid of like losing our spot. And it's not just in our industry, right? It's in any industry of a working mother who feels like taking time away from work is going to put them back, is going to set them back. And so, you know, everybody rushes back in. And I mean, I think about it.
Before we're ready.
Before you're ready.
I have to say, like, my agent, when I had Elliot at the time, you know, I've talked about this before. That was weird. I've talked about this before about an audition coming up for Sideshow and having to turn it down. And I was so depressed about it. And I was like, she's only 2 weeks old. Like, I can't, you know, I'll never have this time again. And my agent, rest in peace, Joel Carlton, who was amazing. He said to me, the business will always be here. He was like, take this time. He's like, your baby will only be a baby once. And this was a man who was not a father. But he had empathy and he recognized that this was a super special time and that I should not be stressing about coming back to a business that, honey, will forget about me in 2 seconds if I don't post something on Instagram or don't have my followers. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
I mean, this is, they're not, he's like, he said, it will always be here. And that was from the person who relied on me to have a job because you know what I mean? So we all need to treat it as such. We all need to recognize that the business will always be here. It's as fickle as it comes, honey, but it will be there. And when the time comes and you're ready to go back, you'll come back.
Yeah. And I have to say, my agent was definitely like, let me know when you want to come back. So, I mean, they were supportive of it. And it was, I mean, I think it was more me feeling, you know, I also feel like just feeling like I wasn't able to fall back. And that's a lot with my personality. It's just, it's a flaw, you know, I've learned it's a flaw. I used to think it was like, because I'm so driven or, you know, and I do have there's part of me that's a big perfectionist and I'm like, what I'm supposed to do. But I don't even know who's telling me that I'm supposed to, you know what I mean? It's all weird thing. And also it's just because in our business and in our society, it's like, I feel like if we have depression or we need more time, it's a sign of weakness versus, and I don't feel like we're allowed to be weaker than people already view us, you know? And that's what's, you know, is wrong with our society too. It's like men get a break constantly. And if we say we need a second or we're struggling or we can't keep our head above water, it's like, oh, probably shouldn't work with them. They can't keep it together. You know, even though we can, we're just like having a moment, you know? And so, and because of what we do is it's so based on other people's opinion of you and other people's, it's also subjective and it's also, and us always feeling like we have to control that narrative is a lot to take on too. And so, I mean, as I've you know, if this pandemic has taught me anything, it's that family and friends are everything, and that our business just poof went away overnight. Mm-hmm. And it's mm-hmm. bizarre. But at this end yeah. of the day, it's like, it's kind of a good lesson on what is your constant and what is there when you want it and you need it, not necessarily for everybody else.
Right. Absolutely.
No, that's true. For sure, Ash.
We're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
I wanted to sort of talk about, you've talked about, you said before, you guys had struggled to get pregnant with Emmeline. And I know now, you know, that you guys have been trying, well, I'll let you talk about your journey, but mm-hmm. you wanted to give Emmeline a sibling. And I know you wanted to do that ages ago, like, yeah. you know, when she was born. Meanwhile, you know, in my house, I was sort of on the fence, and now we've decided.
You shut the door.
I was always like, yeah, now you're it's like, done. The fence has gone up, and it's and I'm on the other side. So for us, that's, you know, one and done. But would you share with us a little bit, because I don't think something else that's not talked about often is secondary infertility. And that is, I believe, a bit of what you're going through, right? Mm-hmm. So that for those who don't know, secondary infertility is when you've had a child and then for reasons unknown, who knows why, or maybe you do and you realize after the fact, but you are unable to conceive another child a second time, even though you have done it before. And that is something I think we just never really hear about. We hear about IVF and we know about infertility struggles that people go on from the get-go, from the jump, mm-hmm. but to go through that after having a child. What has that been like for you guys?
You know, I mean, it's been a lot of ups and downs. And in the beginning, and there's also days where we're like, no, we're good. We're good with one. And then I'm like, well, there's a part of my heart that doesn't feel complete. And then, you know, especially like before the pandemic when I was working and my husband's working and we're like, maybe this is all we can handle if I want to continue and he wants to continue doing what we're doing. And, you know, so I have to say there have been times since I've given birth to Emmeline that we're like, no, we're good. Wait, no, we want another one. No, we're good. No, we want another one. You know, it's like, it's a big decision, you know? And I'm like, yeah. And I mean, I like educated decisions, like beyond. And so, but you know, sometimes I'm like, let go and let God and let's just whatever is meant for me will be. And, you know, I have days where I'm very in line with that. And then some days I'm like, but God, like, I want to control like all the things. Mm-hmm. So I guess our journey with this has been, and I do feel like a big part that about having a second kid is about my profession. And like I said, I mean, I would be lying and doing us all a disservice if I said anything different than that. And so I feel like I was starting to go with not having a second kid out of fear of like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna be out of the game again a couple of years. But I'm like, why do I have to think like that? Like, it's not, you know, having a child is so much more important, or your family or whatever you want for your family is so much more important than anything. And so of course the pandemic hits, everything goes away and I'm going, oh my gosh, I got to the root of why I didn't want to have a second. And it was all about the business and it's all about me and the business. And I have, again, regret that I let that control me. And so now it's done for now. and the business is closed and I don't have my second baby that I actually really want over something that is so, what's the word? Seems right now just kind of not as important, gone, you know? Mm-hmm. And you know who's still here is my husband and my baby. Mm-hmm. And how much we've leaned on each other through thick and thin. And I regret again that I let that, and of course what we do, we love our, what we do. So it's okay to let that dictate things in your life and dictate your decision-making. I mean, it's the only smart way to go about it is to look at your reality and what you want from your life, is extremely important. But I kind of let that talk me out of number two because I was afraid of being out of it for longer. And so this whole year I was thinking like, well now, and it taught me. And so in the beginning of this whole year, we've been trying, and it's not happening because it's gone. And now I have all this like, oh my gosh, I put it on hold for something that went away overnight. And now we're having issues. Like, how dare I think that, oh, the minute I'm ready, it's just going to be like, poof, that didn't happen for me, you know? So now, again, we got pregnant naturally with Emmaline. And now we are actually starting our IVF journey right as we speak. Hmm. Which is a really big jump. And I said we were on our way. So we're all in like the diagnostic testing of like making sure we're good to go. And obviously, we're getting up there. So we want to like step on the gas. So I'm not like, you know, at our high school graduation or his, who know, like an old granny. I am still in my 30s, even though I played Mother Abbess. So, you know.
I was going to say, I actually thought we were the same age. And I discovered today that you're younger than me.
Well, I mean, by a smidge. But Daniel just turned 40 this year, and I'm still a super spring chick. No, not really a spring chick. So we're starting that journey right now, and it's exciting. Sometimes, like we were going to our first appointment, I said, Daniel, we have lost our minds. But we're doing it, and we're both so excited about this journey, and, you know, but it's like, you know, we don't know about our business. Like, I'm thankful that Daniel's been able to not skip a beat in his work. And that's, I've been super grateful for that. But, you know, we're down here in Florida with my family. We rented a place on the beach, which has been such a gift. We're going back to New Jersey. We don't know exactly what we're going to do with Emmaline in kindergarten. I mean, there's so many unknowns, like, for all of us. Like, what the heck are we going to do? You know, we're contemplating where we're going to raise our family. And, you know, before the pandemic, I mean, we moved to Jersey to set roots, and Emmaline would have school or have friends that she was going to go to school with. And then, you know, everybody's world's been turned upside down. So there's so many more unknowns. And here we are going to bring another life into the world, hopefully. I'm like, it's insane. We're absolutely insane. But, you know, it's what we want to do. And we're just going to, you know, hopefully bring another baby into our crazy world. I just feel like we're not complete for whatever reason, even though, but again, it's a new journey. Like, I've never done the IVF situation. And it's also, I hope I'm trying to manage expectations, you know, where I'm not, because who knows if we're going to meet, like I said, we're in the diagnostic part. Like, if we meet with our doctor and he's like, you know what, this is going on, and y'all aren't good candidates. You have one healthy baby, go hug on her. And, you know, I have to be ready for that. I also have to be ready, like anybody, you know, getting all the way and we implant and it doesn't work. Like, and so that part I'm probably the most anxious about is just managing expectations and also being excited. But at the same time, I don't want to go down like depression road again. You know what I mean? It's just like it's a heavy road, even though there's so much excitement, there's so much unknown. Like, even when you get pregnant naturally, there's so, until you hold that precious little thing and you're home from the hospital and you get through those first couple of weeks, I mean, it is like, wow. I mean, it's truly a miracle, all of it. I mean, you know, that it all can even happen. You know, still, I still sometimes look at Emily and I'm like, that is so weird that I made you.
That all the time with my kids. I look at my husband, I'm like, we made these people. They're like people now. It's so weird.
I know. I'm like, Daniel, if we didn't French, she would not be here. You know what I mean? Like, it's so bizarre.
It's crazy.
I'm like, I know it happens millions and trillions and billions times a day. Like, I know I'm not the first mother on earth, but sometimes it feels that you're like, hold the phone. Yeah. Like, I'm in charge of that. Ugh. Take it or leave it.
I think it's pretty amazing, like, a silver lining of this time. And I think all of us has kind of found this in certain ways. Like, it's really refined what's important to us, right? We've been stripped of so much. And so it became so clear to you that you were like, no, I want to have another baby. Like, that is mm-hmm. important to me right now. And also, you're talking about going into all this unknown and trying to navigate. We've also done that this year. Like, everything has been unknown. Things have changed at the drop of a hat, and we've adapted in ways that we didn't think we weren't prepared for and didn't think we were capable of. So it's almost mm-hmm. like we've been kind of armed with more skill than we even know. And maybe that's given you kind of the guts to go move forward with this, you know, even though it Absolutely. Is scary and there could be extreme disappointment and grief attached to it, but hopefully joy mm-hmm. as well, you know? So
yes, absolutely. And I think it's just like, I mean, this whole time, it's like you look at who you have leaned on this year and who like you said, it just has really like honed in on what's important. And I think that's confusing too at times, because I'm like, am I feeling this way because like our business is gone? Like, what will I feel when it starts ramping up, and how do we navigate that? Is it like, and then there's also the question of like, there's so many of our friends that are like, I've been looking for an out. I'm out. I've been questioning leaving the business forever. And like that, there's clarity in that. I'm like, get it. And I guess that's what my biggest hope and prayer for is just clarity. You know, it just, all the decision-making is so, because it's big stuff. It's like, where do you live? Yeah. Where do you want to raise your family? Mm-hmm. Do we want to continue the hustle of that this business requires? Do we want to live in like the most expensive state in the world? You know, it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, it's like all these things that we do, and like being down here, and like I was born and raised here, all my sibs are here. It's so fun. And life is so simple here. You know, it is like, I mean, I haven't lived here since high school, and so much less like have my baby here and the whole thing, but everything is so simple. But then I'm like, will that be what I want forever now that I've gotten like a taste of like city and like New York City being right there and all the thing, the positive yeah. things that, you know, that why yeah. we're all living there, you know, yeah. I mean, it has so many amazing things that you can't get here.
Totally. Yeah.
So it's just like, what lifestyle?
Yeah, I had that feeling too, because it's like I always thought I wanted something to come out of the ether and just like hit me and say, you should do this instead. And this year, something that I have realized is there's nothing else I want to do instead. And Same. That was so refreshing to just think, oh, I don't have to wonder anymore. I can't wait to be back to work. I can't wait to be back in New York City. And I just am ready. Like, here we go. I'm still in it. I'm a lifer. It's what we do. I want to shift a little bit to some of the fun parts of what we do, which is you, because there are fun parts. You are a Disney darling. Yes. So people who are just tuning in, I can't imagine that you, well, first off, you heard our intro, but Ashley, you know, she was Mary Poppins, Belle. The first job out of college was On the Record, which was a Disney show as well. And
I saw you on the Record. I saw the tour.
You did. Oh my I did. Gosh.
We were on 42nd Street, and I think we got free tickets to see you, but I saw you and On the Record.
Oh, my gosh.
That was just a few years ago.
Such a baby.
Just a couple.
Just a couple.
But you, Ashley, have made a career of concert work in the last several years, particularly since Emmeline's been born. I think that has been the bread and butter mostly, right? And mm-hmm. I would love to do concert works. There's nothing that sounds better than going off and singing for a few days, wearing a fabulous gown, getting paid money, and then you go home and have some time off instead of the eight shows a week grind. So how has that been for motherhood? I mean, I can imagine it's easier in a lot of ways than doing the eight shows a week. But also, are you missing out on this other part?
Absolutely. I mean, the funny thing with the whole concert situation is, you know, I kind of started doing it, you know, like you said, I was so fortunate to play these iconic people. And I remember when I was doing Poppins, they asked me to do Feinstein's. And I remember being probably the most nervous I'd ever been. And I realized then that I no longer knew how to just be me on stage. I didn't know how to talk like me. I didn't know how to walk like me. I didn't know how to sing like, not that I wasn't singing or but, you know, without being handed a script or handed an outline of, you know, who this character is supposed to be. And it scared me because I was like, oh my gosh, because I graduated college being like, this is what Ashley does. And then I did 8 shows a week for like 8 years without stopping. Which was, I mean, I'm not complaining. Hello, gross. If I were, I mean, it was amazing.
But it's also hard.
Yeah, it's so hard. But I'm like, I didn't want to be like, I had so much work. I didn't want to sound like that because I was so grateful for it. But that scared me. And so when I ended up leaving Poppins, which was a really hard decision because the show wasn't closing, which is like that never happens where people just get to like leave. And I was like, I'm an idiot. But I was like, I just kind of... I did end up going back for a bit. I just wanted to go figure out who I was on stage as Ashley. And because Feinstein scared me so badly, which it should have been so easy. It was a nightmare. I was so nervous. None of it was fun. I hated every second of it. I was like, get the hook, get me out of here. I hate it. And I was like, this is not how it should be. And so then, honestly, I started concert work just as like a filler of like, oh, until I get my next show, I'll just do this here and there, whatever. And then I started really falling in love with it. And when I started, you know, putting together a solo show, I had a conductor with Indianapolis Symphony. He was like, I want to put together like a just your show. And I was like, all right, I'm here for that. And so we did, because I'd known him forever. So he knew like that I was silly and like he knew my personality and my voice. So we just did all kinds of genres and I was able to just be me. And I was like, I loved it. And then it kind of just started taking off and I was like, but then I was being booked and I was like, wait, how do I make this my business? And so what I, throughout the years, just with different symphony, what I started to do is collect my own charts. So now I have a library of over 50 orchestrations and I have put together my own packages. You know, I have a Christmas, I have an Irving Berlin, I have a Disney, I have an Ashley Brown's Broadway, I have, you name it. And I say, hey, 60 orchestras, what works in your season? And then I have a librarian. And so I'm the one, and then they pay me for all the things. So I was like, oh my, I was able to kind of create my own business within that. And I really found myself as a performer through that. And so I started just really loving it. It became less of a filler and more of a career randomly. And so it just kind of morphed into that. And, you know, and also, especially when I had Emmeline, it was a lot of travel. So I am gone. I was gone like 2 weekends a month at least. So there's that. That's a little rough. But at the same time, Monday to Thursday, I was just mom. And so there was a total plus. But it's so crazy. I know you guys deal with this too, where it's like, don't you feel like just absolutely 2 different people? Like, you know, it's like you're on stage and you're like, you're like signing the stage door and then you go home and you're like, now I'm wiping somebody's hiney. Yeah. You know, it's like, it's a it blows all the minds. So, I mean, but of course there were times where I felt very not stuck because that sounds so negative, but it's, I guess there were times where I was getting so into the concert world where there were times I was missing auditions. I felt like I was the Broadway career, which was like always been my dream, was kind of went on the back burner because of what I was doing was lucrative. But it was also efficient with my time and I could be a mom. So there's something very alluring to like about it, you know, obviously. But I also missed like being in a cast, you know, whereas like with a concert, most of the time I knew the conductor and we could have a kiki, but most of the time I was just me by myself and, which was fun once I became a mom. I was like, ooh, spa day, just laying here. All I have to do is sing 25 songs. That sounds like a vacation. But I missed that, the group, the camaraderie and the family that you have when you're in a cast, you know, and being able to tell a story and do all that kind of stuff.
Yes, but now, the pandemic, you have gotten to sing.
I know,
that's
true. You've
gotten to sing with your besties.
I know.
I mean, plural. It's like Ashley and I, so Ashley and I met because my bestie, Michael James Scott, is also one of her closest buds. And he was the genie in Aladdin. So now they do these Disney concerts. Y'all, her Michael and Josh Strickland, who is your bestie? What does Emmeline call him? Uncle Funny or Uncle...
Uncle Silly.
Uncle Silly.
Oh my gosh.
It's so fitting.
How has it been, though, getting to do these concerts, you know, in the shutdown? You guys did them outdoors, socially distanced, all the things y'all tested.
Got tested, did all the things. Yes. It has been such a gift, and it does not... I mean, it does not go to the side how lucky we are to have been able to do these outdoor, socially distant situations. And to the theaters that have been able to provide, have the budget to provide these outdoor spaces that are safe, I mean, kudos, because not everybody can afford to do it because it's quite the undertaking, I can't even imagine. Not to mention, like, all the responsibility they have. If they're like, so 60 people just got sick at your concert, like, that's a lot to take on.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I, because I did one with Michael in December in Orlando, and then we did the Disney one last month, and then we were just in Boston last weekend. It was my first time flying since the pandemic, and I was like, this is so odd. And I'm like, I told Jessica, I was like, if I hear one more mucus slap, I mean, I'm going to have an anxiety attack. Because, like, everything you hear, you're like, you know, you're like, did you get tested? Did you? But because I was a germ freak before all this, I was like Miss Clorox wipe and everybody judged me, but I'm like, lesson, who doesn't have a head cold for their concert? Me. Because I wiped it all down and y'all judged me. So doing the concerts and everything, there was something the feelings were just all over the place because, you know, in a way for us, we've been doing it so long, it's like riding a bike and, you know, sound check. It's like, oh, we do this and we rehearse and then this is where I go and, oh, I need more piano. I need more of this. But then as I was doing then like sound checking, I'm like, this isn't normal right now. Like, so I kept like going back and forth from like being in your zone and this is what you do to like, wait, Ashley, like take a snapshot, like, and like take this in. This is not happening right now. Like, this is not normal. So it was a very like, weird feeling of like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm singing live. And then I have to say for the Disney concert, just because we're keeping it so real, all of us were so anxious because I'm like, we're singing our heinies off and like we're just singing so many songs and I'm like, do we have the stamina? Like, can we belt for 2 hours and do two shows? Like in Orlando with the Disney thing, we did two shows in one day, so it's 4 hours of like throaty throat straight tone business.
Yeah. Yeah, no, y'all were singing down. I mean, it's a lot like you had done the Festival of the Arts at Epcot for years before. I mean, like you said, you're Disney darling and you love the Disney and all the things. And y'all, when you do those songs, these concerts, you are belting.
Yeah, it's like every 11 o'clock
and y'all are screaming.
Number.
Exactly, yes. Exactly. But you've also gone on the Disney Cruise Line. We're going to get Disney-centric here for a second because you've gone on Disney Cruise Line and you took Emmeline, right? Mm-hmm.
Which, yes,
that's its own thing because it's a fun time. You can put your kid in the kids club, you know.
Thank goodness she liked it because I'm like, let me tell you something. If you don't like it, you're going to learn to like it because this is where you living, girl.
Exactly.
So the Disney Vacation Club has hired the Disney on Broadway performers to come and do their special, like the evening show of their last night of the cruise as like a special presentation. And so that's been so, so fun to be a part of that. And, you know, and like you get to sail with your buddies. And like I got to bring Emmeline one time. But before that, you know, I had nieces and nephews that came with me. I was like, of course, once my kid gets old enough to enjoy this, pandemies. I'm like, that doesn't.
I know.
I'm like,
she
I'm
loves
so sure.
Minnie Mouse.
Oh, honey.
She is all about Minnie Mouse.
And I did not push that. It is a thing. It is a thing.
Well, Disney all day. Ashley, we could sit here and chat with you. I mean, we could keep forever. But we have to go because it's...
Rats.
We've talked and talked and talked for like an hour.
Well, I love you girls. And thank you for this platform to be able to talk so real about being a mom and a performer and all that we do. I know it inspires me and so many others to be able to just talk so open about all this and nobody feel alone. So thank you guys for providing this for
of
so
course.
Many people.
Thank
well,
you.
Well, yeah, we're happy. We're happy to do it. We love to hear from people and to know that it helps them. And thank you for sharing your story and journey with us. And I'm just happy I got to sit and kiki with you for an hour.
So so fun.
And that Mother Abbess key story is going to stay with me for a very long time. So
I'm like, y'all, what is going to happen if I can't get this gate open? Stress me out.
Sound like, Music will have a whole nother ending, honey.
Well, I mean, apparently I climbed the mountain and came back.
Oh my God. Have a good one.
I will. Bye, you guys.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. Special shout outs to Rachel Spencer Hewitt for our fabulous graphic, Kristen Anderson Lopez, Bobby Lopez, and Justin Ward Weber for our awesome theme song, our producers Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, and of course, the Broadway Podcast Network for bringing us to you.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.